Good afternoon. Welcome into another edition of The Scoop here on KLGR 1490 AM FM 95.9 and also myklgr.com. What a busy weekend. A lot going on for all of the Minnesota sports teams. The Minnesota Twins with a new addition that should help what was a very good offense last year. Plus some bad news for the Timberwolves, but a silver lining in that regard. And we'll be talking about exactly what that means with Lucas Seehofer today of Zone Coverage and A Wolf Among Wolves at 3:15 today. Plus plenty of other things to get to. It seems like the Vikings are going to be moving in a new direction at quarterback, something that was certainly a possibility, but some notes today that make it likely that we'll have a new quarterback under center here this season. So plenty to get to here on today's show. Why don't we get right to it? We'll start off by taking a look at our top sports headlines here for today. Taking a look at our top sports headlines for today, the Minnesota Timberwolves had a rocky weekend. It started off with a game against the Houston Rockets on Friday. Butler goes down with a knee injury. The team fears the worst. Fans fear the worst. But thankfully, Butler, with just a torn meniscus, avoided the full ACL tear and has already had surgery for that injury. So the Wolves hoping that Butler can maybe come back for the playoff push. But nonetheless, even without the services of Jimmy Butler, the Wolves took on the Chicago Bulls on Saturday night, and the Timberwolves able to get another win at home as they trounce the Bulls. 122-104, I believe, was the final score. And as we expected, a lot more Andrew Wiggins, a lot more Karl-Anthony Towns, and Jamal Crawford stepping up for some of the offense that will be missed by Butler's absence. But we'll talk plenty of this with Lucas Seehofer coming up in just a bit. Minnesota Twins with a new first baseman slash DH as they signed former Tampa Bay Ray Logan Morrison. Morrison coming off of a season in which he hit 38 home runs, and he will slot in nicely as the team's starting designated hitter, giving them a lot of lineup flexibility. We'll talk more about that coming up here today as well. Minnesota Vikings, it appears, are going to be with a new quarterback to start the season, as some rumors today that the Vikings will not put the franchise tag on Case Keenum and will allow him to become a free agent. Can certainly understand the reasoning here, and we'll get into this more as well later on in the show. Arizona head coach Sean Miller is in some very hot water. He did not coach in the team's game over the weekend after the FBI unveiled. They had wiretap recordings of him talking about payments made to a top prospect that went to Arizona to secure his services. So major news in the NCAA that continues. And the NHL trade deadline is today. We'll be recapping all of the top deals from the trade deadline here tomorrow. That is a look at our top sports headlines here for today. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk to Lucas Seehofer of Zone Coverage and A Wolf Among Wolves after this here on The Scoop.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9 is radio you can depend on for sports and play-by-play. I'm about to lose my mind. You've been gone for so long. I'm running out of time. I need a
And we're joined once again on The Scoop today by Lucas Seehofer, who covers injuries for Zone Coverage, but also writes about the Timberwolves for A Wolf Among Wolves. Lucas, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, unfortunately, we're talking mainly about some negative news for the Timberwolves, and just when it seemed like they were going to be able to secure one of those top spots in the Western Conference playoffs, Jimmy Butler suffered a knee injury against the Rockets on Friday. It sounds, though, like he avoided major injury, but Lucas, just kind of take us through what happened with Jimmy on Friday.
Yeah, so basically Jimmy Butler hurt, tore his meniscus, and the meniscus is a structure inside of the knee. It's made of this dense cartilage, like tissue in the knee, and basically it sits on top of the tibia of the lower leg or the shin bone, and it does a couple of things. It provides cushion for the knee, but it also provides a little bit of stability through the knee by increasing the surface area and the contact between the shin bone and the femur of the upper leg. There's two. When these things get reported, it's typically reported that, you know, the player tore their meniscus or whatever. Well, there are actually two menisci in each knee, one on the medial or the inside part, and one on the lateral or the outside part. The medial meniscus is shaped like a C and is a little more stable, where the lateral meniscus is shaped like an O and is a little more mobile. We're not really sure which one Butler injured, but in the treatment, the recovery time, all those things wouldn't really change depending on which one was injured. What Butler ended up undergoing, by the sounds of it, was an arthroscopic meniscectomy, meaning that they went in and kind of cut out the area that was damaged.
Go ahead.
I would say, and the typical timeline for recovery for those types of injuries are kind of in that 3 to 6 week range.
Okay, excellent. As you mentioned, he had the surgery over the weekend. Now, this is a pretty big blow for the Timberwolves, at least in the short term, but thankfully avoided any sort of injury with his ACL, which would have pushed the recovery time well into next season, correct?
Right, yeah. So if he would have damaged his ACL, the ACL is a ligament. It's kind of one of the major ones in the knee. Once the ACL is torn, even if it's slightly torn, the whole structure is compromised, meaning that if surgery needs to be done, they need to go in and reconstruct it. So typical timeline for those types of injuries, for ACL injuries, is 9 to 12 months. Now, certain meniscal injuries can be repaired, meaning that they kind of go in and they stitch together the area that was torn, but that only certain meniscal tears can be repaired. They have to occur on the outer ring of the meniscus, because only the outer third of it has blood flow, meaning that only the outer third can repair itself over time. And they have to be, they can't be large tears either. So if we were wondering, should Butler have had the meniscectomy, should he have had the repair? He probably, likely because he had the meniscectomy, it means he didn't really have a choice basically repair wasn't an option. But the return to play for repairs are typically the 3 to 6 months, whereas meniscectomy is 3 to 6 weeks.
Now, this leaves a huge void in the Timberwolves starting rotation. It's expected that Andrew Wiggins will have an uptick in scoring, but just what do you think is the best route for the Timberwolves to go in order to fill Butler's spot, not only in the starting rotation, but then to disperse his minutes as well?
Yeah, so I think what we're going to see moving forward is, and obviously we saw this with the last game too, is Nemanja Bjelica is going to kind of become the de facto starter. I know Tibbs had mentioned that he's going to kind of go game by game, matchup by matchup, as to who's going to start in favor of Butler. But, you know, when Butler sat out the games earlier in the year with the sore knee and with his illness, Bielitsa was the starter. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see basically Andrew Wiggins with a more prominent role on offense and on defense. He's now going to be, you know, he's going to be taking more shots. He's going to be getting more of the shots that Butler was getting, but he's also going to now have to defend the opposing team's best wing player. You know, so hopefully we, you know, like to see Karl-Anthony Towns get more touches, you know, maybe someone like a Tyus Jones would get more minutes, something like that. But, you know, maybe Marcus Georges Hunt gets more minutes. Maybe the Timberwolves go out and sign a player that gets bought out over the next few days. But in terms of obvious immediate changes that are going to happen, I think we're going to see a lot more Andrew Wiggins and a lot more Karl-Anthony Towns, and just kind of hope that that's enough to carry them through for the rest of the year.
The Wolves currently have been battling. They're now in the fourth spot, well, technically tied with the Spurs, but percentage points behind them. And the Spurs are dealing with injury issues of their own. Kawhi Leonard has been a sparse sight throughout the season. He played in a few games, but then was shut down again. And sounds like he is dealing with a pretty difficult injury, not only to diagnose, but to come back from as well. And I know you looked into it a little bit for zone coverage. So just take us through what Kawhi Leonard is dealing with here this season.
Yeah, so Leonard was diagnosed, I think even going back so far as the preseason, maybe even before that, with an injury known as quadriceps tendinopathy, basically meaning that he's having pain and some sort of dysfunction with his quadriceps tendon. Now, that dysfunction can mean, you know, lack of power while jumping, you know, like pain with running. Typically, it kind of all centers around that pain aspect. Tendinopathies are, they're very complex injuries. They're not typically something that can be addressed via surgery or anything like that. And they can take a long time to recover. Kind of the long and short of it is that the tendon gets overgrown with blood vessels and nerves, which kind of makes the tendon more sensitive and more apt to be painful during activities like jumping, running, squatting, stuff like that. You see these types of injuries in athletes who do repetitive motions, like repetitive jumping, repetitive sprinting, stuff like that. So they're actually fairly common in basketball players. Now, the reason why they're so difficult is we don't really have great treatment options for how to address them at this point. We know that certain exercises, like eccentric exercises or strengthening the muscle as it lengthens, seem to help. But we also are starting to research more. If you look at the research, they're starting to look at more things like dry needling, which is basically taking a little tiny needle, not dissimilar to acupuncture, but different, and kind of helping to increase the blood flow to that area and kind of, for lack of a better term, get those blood vessels and those nerves to kind of grow back, to kind of die off a little bit, to make that tendon less less sensitive and less painful. So it can take, it's one of those injuries where, you know, if the player can tolerate the pain, they should be good to go, but it can take upwards of, you know, 3 to 6 to 9 months of just like very direct treatment for those tendinopathies in order for them to kind of calm down and become less painful.
Outstanding. Lucas, before we let you go here, I know you have been just working on a variety of things just in terms of discussing injuries and treatments for them for zone coverage. So just take us through that a little bit too.
Yeah, so over at Zone Coverage, we you know, we write about all the Minnesota sports teams. I tend to focus more on the injury side, not only for Minnesota sports players and teams, but also, you know, maybe more national type stuff. Like, I've written about Amir Coffey and his shoulder injury and the surgery he went under. Also recently wrote an article on Wild wingman Nino Niederreiter and him playing on a broken fibula. So just kind of taking the information that's tossed out via the media and kind of putting it into people-friendly terms so that they can get a better understanding of what these players are going through and what kind of rehab they have to do, recovery timelines, things like that.
Outstanding. Lucas, great stuff here today. Thanks for giving us some insight into what Jimmy Butler has in front of him to return to form, hopefully for sure, next season, but maybe see him if the Wolves can get in a deep playoff run. But regardless, we'll see how things play out. Thanks for joining the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Lucas Seehofer of Zone Coverage and A Wolf Among Wolves joining the show here today. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Twins' newest addition, Logan Morrison. We'll have more on him later in the week as well, but a little bit of a look at Logan Morrison coming up after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. For the latest scores, play-by-play, schedules, and more, visit myklgr.com.
Back here on The Scoop, as you may have heard, the Minnesota Twins have made a move to bolster their lineup, as over the weekend they came to agreement on a contract with former Tampa Bay Rays first baseman Logan Morrison. It is a one-year, $6.5 million contract. However, it has a vesting option with escalators and performance bonuses that could make it worth as much as $16.5 million over 2 years. Morrison coming off a season in which he hit .246 with a career-high 38 home runs, 85 RBIs. He walked 81 times as well for the Rays. He started his career with the Seattle Mariners, also played for the Miami Marlins during his career. And just looking at his numbers over his career, a career .245 hitter, 122 career Major League home runs, slugging percentage for his career .433, on base percentage .330, and his OPS .763. Now, looking at this just on the surface, the Twins have brought in a player in Morrison who can help with one spot in the lineup that was going to be a big question mark, the DH spot. Now, coming into the season, it was pretty likely that it was going to be Kenny Vargas as the predominant DH for the Twins, but from what we've seen of Vargas over the last couple of years, that's not really a guarantee for success. And I think the Twins wanted to fill up that spot in the lineup a little bit, but also we still don't know what's going to happen with Miguel Sano in terms of his possible suspension that could be handed down from Major League Baseball. So this gives him a little bit of lineup insurance as well. But just looking at some of the splits for Logan Morrison this past year, he just destroyed right-handed pitching in 383 at-bats against right-handed pitchers, .251 with an on-base percentage of .356, slugged .548, had 32 home runs, 69 RBIs, and walked 61 times. So he's going to be pretty much the mainstay at DH for the Twins. Now, with the fact that he is a first baseman as well, this gives the Twins an opportunity to give some days off to Joe Mauer, and Morrison can just slot in to the field at first base. So that is a plus. And also, I mean, Morrison wasn't terrible against left-handed pitching. 233 with an on-base percentage of 342, and he slugged 419. So his numbers were pretty drastically different, but at the same time, not awful compared to what we've seen from some of the Twins hitters over the last couple of seasons. So he's going to fill a needed power bat in the middle of the lineup. And I mean, you go through some of the potential lineup options for the Twins. That is going to be something that is really exciting as well. Some interesting other things to note for Morrison is he struggled at home. He hit 219 at the Rays home ballpark and had just 11 home runs. But looking at his numbers on the road, he hit 272 with a 392 on base percentage, and he slugged 628 on the road. And I think that shows you that a lot of his power is certainly going to translate, but also walked a bunch, as mentioned. Splits between day and night games, pretty even. But look at what he's done against other teams in the division, what he did against them last year. He struggled a little bit against the Chicago White Sox, but against Cleveland, hit 320 in 25 at-bats. Against Detroit, he hit 263 with a couple home runs. Against Kansas City, he hit 250 with four home runs. And against the Twins, he hit 389, three home runs, and five RBIs in 18 at-bats. At Target Field, he hit 333 with two home runs and three RBIs. But looking at what he did at Comerica Park, 364. He also did well at Kauffman Stadium, hit 333, albeit these are in small numbers, small sample sizes, but still, he was very good, predominantly a first baseman last year, which is also interesting, but still he's going to get to a lot of his at-bats in that DH spot. So also did pretty much all of his hitting out of the cleanup spot, which, again, going back to the options that this gives the Twins with their lineup. So we look, and it seems like Brian Dozier is pretty set in as the leadoff hitter. And then you've got Joe Mauer, who is going to be the number two hitter. Then you can go Miguel Sano as third. Then Logan Morrison as fourth. Then you maybe come back with Byron Buxton as your fifth place hitter. And then you can go Max Kepler sixth. Then you can basically switch so that you don't have any lefty again batting after a lefty or anything like that. So it's going to balance the lineup out, which will be very, very good for a Twins lineup that was good throughout the year anyway. So you're taking a lineup and you are you're making it deeper, you're making it stronger, because as I talked about, there could be a suspension for Miguel Sano coming up here at some point in the next couple of weeks. But also then you're hedging against injury as well. So this Twins lineup that scored the second most runs in baseball in the second half of the season, now pegged to be fourth in Major League Baseball in runs, just behind the likes of Houston, New York Yankees, and Cleveland. So Major League Baseball, the media is starting to really take this lineup seriously. And I find it interesting, we go back to the beginning of the offseason, and there was some frustration with fans as to what the team had done in terms of signing players to try to help supplement the major league talent. We had a couple of moves right away at the beginning of the offseason, getting Fernando Rodney and Addison Reed. Then you get Michael Pineda, and also all of a sudden Anibal Sanchez has some depth, and then you trade for Jake Odorizzi. So now all of a sudden this Twins offseason has been very, very good, and will likely be one that puts them for sure second in the division. They could very likely give Cleveland a chase atop the division if they're able to add a little bit more. That's going to be the key. They've added a lot of great pieces here. If they could get maybe one more starter, then I think the Twins are going to be in a really, really good spot. They've been linked to Lance Lynn throughout the offseason. Does that end up being the move that they go with? Well, we'll just have to wait and see. But a fantastic move for the Twins, and one that that certainly gives them a big hitter in the lineup. A lot of their home runs coming from the right side with Dozier, Sano, and also Buxton the second half of the season. So now this evens the lineup out a little bit, and it makes them a very dangerous team because, again, one of the other things that Morrison does well is he works the count and can draw walks as well. So this team looking very, very good heading into spring training, and I would expect that we'll see Morrison have some pretty good success. There have been some questions as to if his numbers will continue to be where they've been at, or if this last season was kind of an aberration. I don't really think so. I think Morrison is starting to get it figured out. He's made some changes to his swing, and I think that is going to benefit him with the Twins. So good signing for the Twins. We'll see if they can finish it off with a couple of other good signings here in the next couple of weeks. We'll talk all about it on Wednesday with Brandon Warren, who's coming back to the show on a regular basis. So we'll recap all the free agent moves for the Twins on Wednesday. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, looks like the Vikings have maybe decided they're moving on at quarterback, and we'll talk about that after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Missed today's episode of The Scoop? Find each and every episode on myklgr.com under the Sports tab.
Back here on The Scoop, and some interesting news today. Now, nothing official, but Ian Rappaport, who tweets up a storm covering the NFL for NFL.com, tweeting out earlier today, as we see a lot of activity by various teams getting ready for the scouting combine this week. A tweet from Ian earlier today: the Vikings are not expected to franchise tag quarterback Case Keenum, and he's slated to hit free agency per sources with knowledge of the team's thinking. Barring a change of heart, Minnesota joins the fray for a starting quarterback, and that will, according to Rappaport, make these next few weeks fascinating. Now, again, nothing official on this announcement, but still very interesting, and this is something that I kind of was, at least where I was at mentally with it, is yes, we saw Case have a great season, a fantastic year for the Vikings, and leading them to the Minneapolis Miracle, but some things that happened with Keenum that I think made the Vikings a little bit hesitant is you looked at his performance in the NFC title game against Philadelphia, and had a few bad turnovers in that game. Even in the the win against New Orleans in the divisional round of the playoffs. Keenum struggled at times against expert pass rushes. The Saints and Eagles had two of the best throughout the season, and we also saw that against Carolina as well, that Keenum just struggled at times to consistently move the ball downfield. So the biggest question was, is this work that Keenum did a result of being paired with an offensive coordinator that simply did a great job of maximizing the skill players around him and putting him in the best position to succeed? Or was it a result of Keenum making some steps forward as a quarterback in the NFL? Now, if this announcement is true, and the Vikings won't announce anything like this, that simply just will not place the franchise tag on Keenum, that seems pretty likely that the Vikings view a lot of cases success as just some good work by their offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur. Now, that's not to say Keenum didn't have a large hand to play in making the team what it was, but I think the Vikings were a little leery to give him franchise tag money with only having one real season to look at what he did as a quarterback. So I think they are opting to go with a little bit more of a known commodity. Now, some of the other free agents out there for the quarterback position, we've got a few of them that you could go to. So let's just see some of the possibilities that the Vikings could go with. Now, a couple of possibilities that were on the team this past season: Sam Bradford, who would be certainly an option for the Vikings, although I don't think they're going to go that route, not because Sam is not talented. He certainly is. There's just a lot of risk involved with having Bradford be your franchise quarterback, because you don't know what to expect with his knee issues that he's had throughout his career. He could get you through 15 games like he did two seasons ago. He could get you through a game and a half like he did last year. Now, either of them are entirely possible, but here's the other thing with Bradford, and this is not a knock on him. This is just simply the way it is. Bradford is not particularly mobile. He's good at maneuvering the pocket. He did a good job of getting rid of the ball before he was met with pressure. In his first year with the Vikings, was very, very good at that. But I think we saw a little bit of why the Vikings like having mobile quarterbacks, because look at what Case Keenum was able to do with the offense. He was able to extend plays and had a lot of what seemed like third down, take a sack, and punt situations where he was able to scramble out, avoid pressure, and end up getting the ball downfield for a first down. So I think the Vikings like to go in that direction. Now, that doesn't mean that they necessarily want like a Michael Vick type quarterback who is going to be more of a run first almost type player. We've seen that before with several quarterbacks that the Vikings have had recently: Joe Webb, Tavares Jackson. You could even throw Christian Ponder in that category. I think if you're looking for a quarterback for the Vikings, someone who can step up in the pocket, can avoid pressure, and can deliver the ball downfield if needed, I think that is ideally the way that they would like to go. So let's see who some of the other options are. Teddy Bridgewater as well is an option for this team. Now, Bridgewater, again, just like with Bradford, is an injury concern coming off of a dislocated knee. Teddy worked his way all the way back and was able to get onto the field for a couple of plays against the Cincinnati Bengals. So he would be an option to go. And all offseason I've been saying you go one way or the other. You pay for a proven name on the free agent market and you go that route, or you use a little bit less money on the quarterback spot and you maximize the talent around that quarterback. So they could go that route, or they could go with a free agent option that wasn't on the team last year. So Bridgewater, I think, has shown enough to where the team is at least comfortable with him if they know what they're getting. If he can show that he is healthy, then I think they will be okay with him as the starter. But some of the other names. Now, going through this list on SpotTrack, Drew Brees is not going anywhere. Drew Brees is going to be a quarterback of the New Orleans Saints next year. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of how much money. He will play there until his career is over, and then he will likely go into the Hall of Fame. So Drew Brees is not going to be coming to the Vikings under any circumstances. This is not going to be a Brett Favre-type scenario where they send players in a van down to go recruit him to play. No, that's not going to happen. Brees is staying in New Orleans, and that is that. Kirk Cousins, certainly the most rumored name to be headed to the Vikings, and he does some very good things. We've talked about this in the past. He's very consistent and doesn't have as big of swings between, you know, Case Keenum's games against, like, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for example, and then his start against the Detroit Lions. He doesn't have that huge swing. He struggles. All quarterbacks do in certain games. There are some things, though, with him in terms of ball security in the pocket and awareness as well are some things that he struggles with. Now, again, a kind of a reverse off of Keenum are a lot of the struggles that Cousins has dealt with due to the players around him. The offensive line in Washington has been good, but over the past couple of years has really started to deteriorate. So are a lot of the things that he does dependent off of what the supporting cast around him is doing? That's a fair point to speculate. But I know one thing. You look at the numbers, he's passed for 4,000 yards the last three seasons, over 25 touchdowns, and he is a guy that can really move the ball downfield if needed. So I think Cousins would be a good fit if the team decides to go that route. But some other names to look for as well. You've got, now these are going to be pretty much for just backup roles. Josh McCown, I think, is the most intriguing because he's worked with John DeFilippo before. So I think he would be a very good fit helping back up whoever is the quarterback here. So McCown would be a good fit, but some of the other names, Jay Cutler, Drew Stanton, Chad Henne, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Derek Anderson, Mark Sanchez, Matt Moore, Scott Tolzien, Geno Smith, Kellen Clemens, that's as far down as I think I'm going to go. Not really a whole lot that they do. Now, there could be some other players added to this list, depending on how things play out with players being cut. I know Tyrod Taylor could potentially be cut by the Bills, so he would be an option. Then you could also draft a quarterback as well if the Vikings decide to go that route too. So a lot of options for the Vikings. It just would be nice to settle on one so that we don't keep having this conversation every offseason about what are they going to do at the quarterback position. So we'll see how it all shakes out, but it certainly does seem like they are going to be moving on from Case Keenum. And, I mean, what can you say about Keenum, how he handled the situation, stepping in for Bradford after Bradford went down with an injury. Then being able to lead this team to 13 wins without really ever having full support of the coaching staff. They treated it as though it was more of a backup role, as he's been throughout his career. So handled it phenomenally well, but I think it just makes sense for Keenum to test his free agent value on the open market. Now, that doesn't mean he won't be back here. He certainly could if things don't pan out on the market, but I think at this point it seems pretty likely that it'll be a different quarterback under center for the Vikings here this season. We're going to take our final break. We'll see what is on deck when we come back here on The Scoop.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Your home for Redwood Valley Cardinal Athletics all season long. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Let's take a look at what's on deck here for tonight. We'll start off in the NHL. Games tonight, Washington at Columbus at 7 Eastern, Philadelphia at Montreal at 7:30 Eastern, Toronto at Tampa Bay at 7:30 Eastern, Vancouver at Colorado at 9 Eastern, and the Vegas Golden Knights at Los Angeles at 10:30 Eastern. Also, with the NHL trade deadline today, we'll take more of a look at any of the big deals in the NHL tomorrow, and also we'll recap all of them with a special guest on Thursday here on The Scoop. Moving on to men's basketball, Big Ten schedule for tonight. No games on the schedule tonight and nothing until Wednesday for the Big Ten. Over to the NBA, full slate, Los Angeles Lakers at Atlanta at 6:30 Central Time, Memphis at Boston at 6:30, Chicago at Brooklyn at 6:30, Golden State at the New York Knicks at 6:30, Detroit at Toronto at 6:30, Phoenix is at New Orleans at 7, Orlando at Oklahoma City at 7, Indiana at Dallas at 7:30, Houston at Utah at 8 o'clock, and the Minnesota Timberwolves at the Sacramento Kings at 9 o'clock tonight. Spring training, Major League Baseball, several games underway right now, and at last check, the Minnesota Twins leading St. Louis 3-2 in their game. Other games underway, Detroit at Baltimore, Washington at Atlanta, the New York Mets at Houston, Boston at Pittsburgh, the Houston Astros in a split squad game at Miami, Toronto at Tampa Bay. Other games today include Oakland at the Chicago White Sox, Cleveland at Milwaukee, the Los Angeles Dodgers at Texas, Seattle at the Chicago Cubs, Arizona at Cincinnati, Kansas City at San Francisco, the Los Angeles Angels at San Diego, Colorado at Arizona, and later today, Philadelphia. The Phillies are at the New York Yankees. That is a look at what's on deck here for tonight. It's time for us to wrap it up. That does it for today's edition of The Scoop. Big thank you to Lucas Seehofer for joining the show today to give us a little insight on Jimmy Butler's road back after the knee injury he suffered this weekend. Plenty more coming up here throughout the rest of the week. We'll recap the trade deadline for the NHL on tomorrow's show, and we'll also take a look at plenty of other sports here on The Scoop. Have a great rest of your afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow at 3:05 here on KLGR Redwood Falls.